Through testimony, we're going to get going because members have multiple places to be at one time with multiple committees interfering with our quiet Fridays. We're our time to do things on Fridays. We have our vice chair that is going to go first. We do have a quorum now. Members, we have a quorum, however, we do not have minutes, and it's been a hectic week in trying to get in to make sure that we have everything going, so I do apologize for that. Representative Breinhart, good morning.
Morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for your flexibility today. It's my privilege to be here today on behalf of House File 1590, which proposes a regional children's mental health pilot project. Both the governor's bill and Representative Dreiling's include children's mental health grants to counties and collaboratives. In addition, Representative Dreiling's contains early intervention collaboratives for high-risk children. This bill's initiative includes some of these elements taken to another level, with a proposal for an 11-county collaborative pilot project in children's mental health, taking some of the successes from an adult mental health collaborative model and seeking efficiencies and improved service across the region. Southern Minnesota has a history of successful collaboration, including the South Central Children's Project, and the hope is to apply these principles in a broader arena and create a model for the state. Before I turn it over to the experts, I'd like to acknowledge Representative Bob Gunther's role in this proposal. He put the challenge to Bob Meyer, Director of Human Services for Blue Earth County. The challenge was accepted, and this bill is a result. I'd like first to introduce Phil Claussen, Director of Operations for Blue Earth County Human Services.
Yeah, Phil Claussen from Blue Earth County.
My mistake.
No problem.
Is it Rinda?
It's Rinda.
Sue Rinda, Human Services Director of Lesueur County, will go first. And Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I'm going to excuse myself, and Representative Morrow will be here with our testifiers. Is that all right if I don't stay for questions, or should I stay?
Representative Breinhart, I know you have a bill up in another committee. If something comes up that your testifiers can't answer, we'll lay your bill over and come get you.
Well, they're both very knowledgeable, and Bob Meyer of Blue Earth County is also here, the initiator of the bill. So.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. My name is Susan Rinda. I'm the Director of Human Services for Lesueur County. And my role today is just to give you a little bit of a background on our regional approach. We are building this upon our adult mental health initiative, which, as Representative Breinhart has stated, consists of 11 counties in South Central Minnesota, working collaboratively since 1996. And in that initiative, we have developed a governance structure that has been successful in bringing increased services and resources to the community and reduced reliance on institutional care and lessened utilization of deep-end service needs. And in that structure, we have a director's council with representation from various state entities, and we also have a regional management team that consists of supervisor level, and our consumers are voting members on that council. And we have various advisory councils and stakeholder meetings. Our regional partners have identified a critical need to create a similar well-coordinated system to address the needs of children with mental health issues and their families that has the ability to integrate with the adult system for youth in transition as well. We joined forces this past fall by making each county made a contribution to hire a facilitator to work with us on the development of the proposal and language before you today. We have a vision of more consistent practice standards throughout our communities. We recognize that counties have unique needs and service delivery opportunities and challenges. However, there are common issues we all deal with, and if we work together to plan, coordinate, develop, and share resources, we can produce greater results and set a higher standard of care for children and their families. We are strongly committed to giving focus to best practices and standardization of practice. One example would be a shared philosophy for our out-of-home placements and a standard protocol of operation. Currently, that varies across counties and the state. Another example would be that we could provide increased mental health training and supports to parents and to foster parents who are our next preference for out-of-home care to enhance opportunities for stabilization in the community. We really want to keep kids in their communities. The third piece I'd like to talk about is effectiveness and measured outcomes. We would design this children's regional management team, and its areas of focus will be an investment in the children and families of South Central Minnesota. But the benefits can impact our entire state. Each of the focus areas described in our proposal, and Phil will elaborate a little bit more in a minute, can serve as a laboratory for improving quality and reducing costs of services. We propose a number of actions to support evaluation of these efforts. We want to embed performance measures and evaluation processes into each of the recommended actions, provide public reports of the evaluation findings annually, and we'd like to convene an annual conference for children's mental health to bring representatives together from across the state to consider best practices, evidence-based insights, kind of at the ground level working. And given the structure, the work of the South Central Minnesota counties could serve as a pilot. Obviously, what we're providing for today is a pilot for statewide system improvement as well. And just finally, a couple of examples of what has worked well for us in the Adult Mental Health Initiative, and I think the heart of it has to do with meeting consumer needs, involving our consumers in the planning process. We have various advisory councils, and of course, they're voting members at our table, Region of Management. And our February stakeholders meeting, we had 250 consumers come and participate and learn about services and actively participate. Therefore, this increases services that are person-centered, consumer-focused, and increase their access and satisfaction with their care. And another outcome that we have is that prior to the RTC closure in our area, we had reduced utilization of institutional care by over 80%. And so we know that by design and service delivery, funneling services back onto the community, we can reduce the high-end care that's demanded upon as well. And at this point, I will turn it over to Phil, who will talk to you about more of the areas of the proposal.
Good morning, Mr. Clausen. But before you do that, members, I don't think the bill is officially in front of us. I don't think Representative Reinhart did that before she left, and so I am going to move that House File 1519 be recommended to pass. It has been a really long week.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Clausen. Thank you. Where is it going? Health and Human Service. I am going to do that again. I will move House File 1590, recommended to pass, and we refer to Health and Human Service Policy. There we go. I apologize. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. Sue really...
Austin?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I know you had said your name earlier, but
yes.
If you could officially do it for the tape, I'd appreciate
Absolutely.
That.
Bill Clausen, Blue Earth County Human Services. My title is Director of Operations. Madam Chair and committee members, Sue has done a nice job of just showing you the overworkings of what we're looking for in this bill, and that is really that we have a vehicle or a structure on the adult side of mental health services in our communities, and we do not have a similar framework for children. And so I'm going to just dive into some of those specifics real briefly for your attention and just to give you a sense of where we're hoping to go with this bill. Mine will be a little more focused on the core components of this bill. Some overview statements. Children's mental health population has not had a rich amount of advocacy. And so part of our bill is to bring that to the fore and to try to bring some parity and equity to this population that we all care about deeply. Stigma still exists for this population, both to the children and the families that mental health affects. And finally, there continues to be service gaps in our community, things that are going unmet with children in our community that need to have some specific attention, and I'll go into some of those examples now. We propose four specific areas of focus for our project. The first is on case coordination or case management. Those terms sometimes are confused, but they in this purpose really focus on hands-on social work. We want this project to be about social workers intervening with families, working with them in a very hands-on way, and building relationships with the children and their families. We want to emphasize the practical supports that directly improves the functioning of the children and their families. And finally, under care coordination, we want to build this relationship with the families around their unique needs and their specific cultural needs that are represented within their family systems and their culture. So that's the first section. The second section is really flexible funding, and I do want to make special emphasis about this area. We've seen this to be a very crucial part of our success on the adult side of the services that we provide. Flexible funding to us means these real practical pieces, and I just have a list of some examples. Transportation supports, that might be bus tokens, that might be repairing vehicles that break down for families and they don't have the means to repair them, to get children to sports activities, to get them to school, to get them to after school programs. So we want to be very specific about these types of things, getting kids to camps during the summertime when school is not in session. YMCA memberships, even book card gift certificates that people can go to Barnes & Noble or whatever retailer and buy books and make sure that they have those types of outlets. And then some real practical things about clothing, housing. If the family is in risk of losing an apartment, that there could be utilities that are supported through that. Even practical things as cleaning supplies that people might be willing to look at cleaning their home. There might be a risk of eviction if they do not. We've done things like buy dumpsters for people and make sure that they can clean out what's going on so they don't lose their housing. So that's just a really important part of this. I think the flexible funding will eliminate some of the practical barriers that families experience and also provide short-term supports of the list I just mentioned. And it keeps the family moving forward. That's our biggest piece of this, is that we want to build some momentum in the functioning of the family. Third area, integrated care coordination. You've heard about this through the managed care changes that have come. We believe that children's mental health needs to be approached in the same manner, integrating primary health, the medical care, behavioral health, and all the therapeutic components that can come with that, social services, which of course is our expertise. And then also the family piece is part of integration, too. We see family involvement very crucially in children's situations, obviously, because we want to take a long-term approach. And even though providers might come and go and county social services might come and go, the families are in it for the long haul. So we want to pull them in, make sure communication is at the core of our model, and make sure that piece is a core component. Functioning improves over a long period of time, and we want to look at it from that perspective. Improved coordination will require us to improve our communication with these families and make sure that the family's communication and the providers of care that provide the care, that those are going as smoothly as possible. The final component I want to present to you today, we want to focus on one or two primary goals with each child and with each family and make sure that we don't get lost in a long litany of issues that might be presenting in a certain situation. It can be overwhelming to the families to have a case plan that has five different things that you're working on, plus an IEP plan, plus the doctor has a plan, there might be court services involved. All of those plans aren't coordinated, and so we want to, in an integrated way, look at what are the one or two biggest things. And even if it comes through our door in social services, that it might be a medical need, that it's real important that a child goes and sees their primary care doctor. So we'll facilitate that as the priority. That will be the model that we're looking at here. We believe in building positive momentum. We believe with older adolescents, which often when we talk about children's mental health, I'm not sure what vision comes up in your mind, but with these older children, the transitional care that you've probably heard about, employment, vocational interests, that we're keen in on those issues and trying to treat those specially because they are looking at a major change in their development. And we want to make sure that there is a path for them to move into adulthood. Medication management certainly needs to be mentioned. Access to specialized care is another important piece. And coordination with schools, IEPs, that get written, individual education plans that get written, need coordination between social services, primary health, behavioral health, and the schools. And we believe this model that we're designing will help to do that in our region. I want to reemphasize Sue's comment about the fact that this is an 11-county effort, and we believe that it is a pilot that can be demonstrated both on a regional basis but also have statewide implications. And so we do want to just cause you to take special awareness of that piece of our proposal, and we do ask that you support our proposal. That's the end of my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clausen. Are there any questions or comments that members may have? Seeing none, I would just say thank you. Representative Reinhardt is behind you. She made it back. Good luck on trying to figure out how to incorporate these services. I think if members recall, when we had the map as it relates to some of the gaps, especially when you got outside of the metro area in rural Minnesota, and some of the things that we need to be doing to change some of that, it is going to be working collaboratively. And so I wish you guys the best. I have one question, Representative Reinhardt, real quick. On page one, and I'm not sure if your testifier will know, on line 16, I'm just curious, talking about out-of-home placement, if there is a thought of how that would be done, just briefly.
Madam Chair, I would invite Mr. Clausen to speak to that because he would have the expertise.
One thing that we've discussed about, especially with the out-of-home placements, Madam Chair, are that there does need to be a standard of practice. I think there is a lot of variability between counties, and one of our strengths in our region is that we do work well together, and we meet on a regular basis at every level, both at director level, supervisory level, and our workers have opportunity to communicate. But what we need is some standard of practice around out-of-home placements. One thing that I would heighten awareness to is on the adult side, we've gone through a major shift from regional treatment centers to the community. And this piece that you're asking about, Madam Chair, is probably the mirror of that. Is out-of-home placements needs to have a focus, much like the change kind of at a cultural level that has happened by using regional treatment centers. We don't want to be dependent on sending kids away from their home as a matter of course in how we treat children. We'd like to keep them always connected to the community. When there are needs for intervention outside of their home, that those be short-term, that they be very specific, and that we measure those very precisely and try to reintegrate as quickly as possible. So we believe in a very much of a community-based philosophy, much like what we've seen on the adult side through the safety net redesign that's happened from the regional treatment centers.
Thank you. I will move House File 50, unless there are any questions that members have. I will move House File 1590, recommend it to pass, and we refer to the Health and Human Service policy. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you, Representative Brightnot.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Otremba. Good morning.
Good morning. You want me to move the bill?
Would you mind?
I will move House File 794.
And I believe we are going to recommend it to pass, and we refer to Health and Human Service policy also.
Okay, thank you. First of all, thank you for hearing my bill. This bill would require medical assistance to cover consultations with psychologists. This allows a 23.7% critical access mental health services rate increase. And I have experts to fill in the gaps here, so who would like to go first?
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Benson.
Madam Chair and representatives, thank you for the chance to appear today. My name is Steve Vincent. I'm a psychologist living and practicing in St. Cloud, Minnesota. I've been here for 30 years, and I am the Director of Behavioral Health Services at St. Cloud Hospital. I'm also the president of a group or an association of Greater Minnesota hospitals called the Minnesota Behavioral Health Care Coalition, and I'm also a member of the governing council of the Minnesota Psychological Association. And so I speak today in all of those positions. This House File 794 is essential to accomplish two of the major goals that the Mental Health Action Group has been working on for the past 4 years. As I'm sure you all know, the Mental Health Action Groups have been a public and private partnership to redesign and improve mental health services in the state. And the Governor's Mental Health Initiative, which you heard last week, brings forth some initiatives this year for redesign. Last year's legislature did several important things for redesign, and two of the major goals of last year's legislation was to improve access to mental health services and to improve the integration of mental health care with the rest of health care. Because psychologists comprise the single largest group of licensed mental health professionals in the state, if we really want to improve access and really want to improve integration, we need to improve include psychological services. And that is simply what House File 794 does. It includes psychological services in the efforts to improve access and to integrate mental health care with medical and other essential health services. And so with that in mind, the entities with which I'm associated and I personally really support this bill and ask for your support of it as well. I'll stop at that point. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I'd like to turn the microphone, and if I might, to my colleague, Julie Garrett.
Thank you, Dr. Vincent. And Dr. Garrett, good morning to you. If you could officially say who you are to the tape, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and representatives. Thank you for having me here to speak in support of House File 794. My name is Lily Garrett. I am a licensed psychologist. I am currently employed as the Chief Professional Officer of the Minnesota Psychological Association. I am also the past president of the Minnesota Association of Black Psychologists, and I've been practicing in the field for almost 28 years. And I wanted to just take a few minutes to describe some of the experiences I've had over that time period relating to consulting with physicians. The issue of consultation between psychologists and physicians is really a patient care issue. The current best practices is for integrated care and to not only treat a person's body but to also treat their mind as well, as you will find that almost all medical problems have a mental health component to them. I am one of the 8 African American child adolescent psychologists in the state of Minnesota. And I don't know what the current census is of the number of African American children in the state, but the last I read there were some estimated to be somewhere around 250,000, with about a third of them living in poverty and under difficult conditions. As an African-American psychologist, our group not only serves African-American children, but other children of color and poor children in general who are involved in the social welfare system and who come from families with multiple needs. So, as a black psychologist, we serve the Latino, Native American, Hispanic, and Hmong communities as well. In my past, I have worked extensively in terms of consultation with primary care physicians. I work with children who have asthma, who have diabetes, and who are struggling with self-esteem or compliance issues. And the physician wanted a mental health consult on how best to help the child and whether to make a mental health referral. I've also engaged in consultation with other medical professionals. For example, I've had dentists who have contacted me about patients of theirs. For example, they might have a family where all of the children have a lot of cavities and they're concerned about neglect or abuse. Or they might have a child with repeated dental emergencies and they're concerned about whether the child either has some other disorder or whether something harmful is happening in the home for the child. A situation that I encountered a few years ago really brings to light the issue of consultation between psychologists and physicians. When I was working at a medical clinic, I had a physician, a primary care physician, who frantically came into my office, just walked into my office, and said that he had a woman in his office who was Hmong, and she was there for some sort of a physical or some routine care, and the woman admitted that she was on an antipsychotic medication, and she had given the medication to her children. The physician was wondering whether he should call Child Protection Services on her because he thought it would be a child abuse issue. And so I discussed with him about, we need to first sit down with her, talk with her about her situation, figure out what she was thinking at the time. And so I got an interpreter and went to his office, met with her, asked her a series of questions, and determined that what happened was that when she went to fill her prescription, the pharmacist explained to her through an interpreter that her medication would help her to sleep better and feel better, that she would be better able to care for her family and cook and clean, and that she would feel happier. And so her interpretation of what the pharmacist explained to her was that she was taking a vitamin. And she thought it was something good for her, it would be good for her children, so she's really trying to be a good mother. Further questions also revealed that she didn't give the kids the full dose, actually. That she took one pill and broke it up into like six small pieces and gave each of her children a piece of it. But that's an example of how consultation between a physician and a psychologist can clarify issues and provide better patient care and avoid additional problems and stressors for the patient. So I'd like to thank you for allowing me to speak today. If you have any additional questions, I will take questions at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Garrett. Are there any questions that Member Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering what was the precipitation for the bill coming forward as far as the psychologist wanting to be underneath this situation and are there matching funds from the feds that deal with this situation for people who are in need of a psychologist? Also, has the Board of Medical Practice been contacted, and how do they, what's their view on this situation?
Mr. or Dr. Vincent?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. To the best of my knowledge, the Board of Medical Practice hasn't been contacted. I haven't spoken to them. I have spoken to medical colleagues who, at least one of whom had said to me when this passed a few months ago, the next step is that we need to get psychologists included in this coverage. So I certainly wouldn't say that he represents all of the psychiatrists in the state, but he is a colleague of mine, and I know he was integral to the initial legislation about this, so I think there is at least some level of support in that regard. to the extent that there is federal matching funds for any medical assistance service, I think they would be available for this. The impetus for this is, as I tried to capture previously, is simply that to accomplish goals of improved access and to accomplish goals of integrated care, we really need to include psychologists because they are, in fact, the single largest group of licensed mental health professionals. So that's the impetus.
Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In reality, they're doing this job already, and we're just looking for that critical access, like our critical access hospitals in our rural areas. We have huge deficits in providers, and we're hoping that this will bring more providers to our rural areas because they get paid more in the city, so to speak, and this brings them up to a level where they're willing to come and work with us. I mean, I can give you an example. I was subbing last fall, and this little kid was diagnosed in September and could not get in to see anybody until February. So those are the kinds of stories that are out there because of the lack of access. And what we're doing is giving them a higher reimbursement, which the physicians and the other providers they've been asking for this for a couple years, and the need for access is growing faster than what we're getting out in our communities.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting that maybe it's been asked for a long time ago. I don't know, but it seems like we should have had this in place two decades ago.
Exactly, and we've tried, but now we hope we'll be successful.
Dr. Vincent.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I think that we should have had it in place long ago, and this is what's coming out of the mental health action groups that Governor Pawlenty and Gary Cunningham started about 4 years ago now, and I think so there are a number of initiatives trying to accomplish things that no doubt we should have had years ago, and so I'll just affirm your point. I think that's quite right. We should have had it years ago, and hopefully better late than never.
Representative Otremba, I have one second question, and I'm not quite sure if it's for you or counsel. On page 1, line 10, the stricken language, is that just to make it clear? Does that, by having that language stricken, does that make it go retro? I'm just wondering about that. Ms. Ace.
Madam Chair, I believe that that is probably just extraneous language because this was written before 2000, written like at the point in time where you needed to reference when it was effective. Since it's already effective, it would be effective upon passage.
Thank you for that. Any other questions by members? Seeing none, I will move House File 794. To be recommended, and we refer to Health and Human Service Policy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. House File 794 passes. Good luck, Representative.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Thiessen. Yes, I will move House File 913, we recommend it to pass, and we refer to Health and Human Service Policy. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for hearing this bill. And it's actually a bill I'm very pleased to be carrying because I think it will help an organization that does a lot of great work. House File 913 would allow for the continuation of a current program which is serving one of the most challenged populations in our state. The safe haven facilities, which is what this is about, are in Hennepin and Ramsey counties, and they're relatively modest in size, but they're making a really big contribution to improving the lives of people who suffer from mental illness. And this bill is about supplemental group residential housing rates and appropriations to help provide supportive services to these to the folks that they're serving. And really they're serving a very vulnerable population of homeless people who are trying to move from the streets into a stable housing situation and be more productive part of society. So I think one other comment, we have supported the Safe Haven facilities in the past, so this would be a continuation of kind of some work that we've already committed ourselves to, I think. And I'd just like to actually turn it over to our testifiers at this time, and I can explain in more detail the work that they do and why they need this.
Thank you, and good morning. If you can identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning. My name is Joan White, and I am a Program Development Director for People Incorporated, the organization that operates the two safe havens. I think I'm going to get some assistance. We brought along some pictures of where folks are, where they live when we begin serving them. People Incorporated in 1995 started, we are a mental health agency. We started searching for people who were not getting any kind of mental health treatment because we feel our part of our job is to find the untreated and the undertreated individuals and help them receive the treatment that they need in order to stabilize and have the kind of life and goals and reach the goals that they want to reach. So we began an outreach program because we discovered a number of people living on the streets several years ago, actually 12 years ago. And our outreach worker at that time had a great deal of background in mental health, and he was discovering people who had been never diagnosed or had been diagnosed many years ago, had maybe been in the state hospital in the 70s, had been discharged, but then became homeless and therefore received no treatment. We realized that soon after we began this outreach program, and we were serving several hundred people a year, we began to realize that we absolutely had to do more. And this was in the late 90s. We knew that we needed to provide more intensive services. And this is at the same time that access to mental health services tightened up. The wait for seeing a psychiatrist went from 3 to 4 weeks to a month to 2 months to 3 months. If you are homeless, living on the streets, sleeping in makeshift camps, relying on the equipment that our outreach workers were giving you to survive, an appointment 2 or 3 months down the road never gets made. People don't have calendars in their camps. They are more interested in what they're going to eat in the next 24 hours. So what we decided to do was to do some research, and we did some national research to find out exactly what it is that makes an impact on long-term street homeless adults with serious and persistent mental illness. And again, the reason we bring these pictures is to illuminate the fact that these are not folks who sleep in shelters. Their mental illness keeps them from being able to handle a crowded shelter situation. So they choose, in parentheses, to stay outside where they don't feel that they're getting into hassles, where they don't feel that the closeness with other people in a shelter is harming them in any way. From the national models, we decided to do a special kind of housing called Safe Haven. Up until 2 years ago, Minnesota did not have a safe haven. They are in the large urban areas like in Seattle, San Francisco, Chicago. And what they are, the reason they're a specialized housing situation is that they accept people with serious and persistent mental illness who would not meet the requirements of other housing. Other housing might say, yes, you can come in, but this is the list of behaviors you have to follow that when you come in and when you stay here. You have to be on medication. You cannot be using drugs or alcohol. That is not where these people are at. These people are at hand-to-mouth living situation, that's their behavior, that is where we get them, that's where we need to accept them. So our safe haven, like other safe havens around the country, are what they're called entry tolerant. We bring people into these two buildings, one which we opened in April of 2005 and the other we opened in August of 2005, along with the University of Minnesota Department of Psychiatry. We not only bring them inside, but we provide them an intensive treatment solution to all of their untreated mental health situations. They get a diagnosis, they meet with the doctor from the University of Minnesota who works at the safe haven. He's a t-shirt jean kind of doctor, not a three-piece suit. He provides diagnostic assessments. We uncover many other kinds of illnesses like traumatic brain injury. And we serve these people. What we found is originally we thought that people would take 6 to 8 months to stabilize, and we've had some incredible successes with people who have been very ill, coming around in about 4 months. Today we've got a couple of other people here that want to talk with you. The first person I'm going to introduce is Rick Stein, who is going to talk about his personal experiences.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. If you could give your comments or give your name for the official tape. And
yeah. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Richard Stein. I first came across People Incorporated about 13 months ago. I had a homeless camp, and I was living there. I've been homeless for about 5 years. And when I got connected with one of their outreach, excuse me, got a bad cough, and met one of their outreach workers, and they got me into their program. Since then, they've helped me quite a bit. Got numerous health issues and that. But prior to me being homeless, I'd been gainfully employed. I was used to work at Ramsey Hospital. I was a CNA for 10 years. Resigned from there. I was a manager for two companies. But then I got really wrapped up in drug use. And that's when everything started spiraling out of control. I've been clean from the drugs for 3 years. Been on the wagon for alcohol for over 10 years. I go to AA meetings. But People Incorporated, though, they've helped me a lot. I wouldn't be here right now speaking to you guys. I'd probably be another number because of my major serious health concerns that I have. I've got like COPD, I've got coronary artery disease, I've got stage 2 hypertension, and there's a few other things thrown in there. But this company, People Incorporated, I'm sorry, been very instrumental, get me on some meds because I suffer from severe depression. And like a lot of people that have mental illness that are out there, especially with that depression, just trying to make a simple decision is very complicated. You know, it's just, it ties up your whole day. And fortunately for them, you know, they got me diagnosed, got me on some meds and that, and been seeing my medical doctors for other things. But there's a lot of other people out there, you know, that have slipped through the cracks, and that's how I kind of was doing, slipping through the cracks, and with the help of them, hopefully soon I'm going to be going back to school and want to become a productive member of society again. Thinking about taking up counseling so I can talk to kids and that about my drug experience and that. But I'm going to pass it over to Nancy here.
Thank you, Mr. Stein, for coming to share your personal story, and congratulations on your sobriety. Yes, ma'am, if you can identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Nancy Webster Smith, and I'm the Director of People Incorporated Homeless Services. Before I get started with anything that I would like to mention, I would just say on behalf of Rick, we were in the hallway, and a gentleman that had just left this room came up to him and said, weren't you a representative in there talking about a bill? So, kind of takes away some of that stereotype of people being homeless. So,
yes, indeed.
Yep. Cleans up very nicely. We had a lot of fun. Dr. Vukatich is our psychiatrist who is with the University of Minnesota. And as Joan and Rick have both mentioned, he is very much a grassroots kind of psychiatrist. He has gone out to the homeless camps with us, as well as comes to our safe havens, both in Ramsey and Hennepin County, on a weekly basis. With the direction of his supervisor, Dr. Charles Schultz, this has become kind of a model way of providing community psychiatry. He has an office at our safe haven, which they're renovated old houses, and it makes them so much less intimidating and threatening for our people who've had some rather negative experiences. Come in, have a very comprehensive diagnostic assessment so that we can start providing services, either continue out in the camps with folks or in our safe havens. With a comprehensive diagnostic assessment, we are actually able to get people on benefits, which leads me into, and I believe most of you have a copy of an extremely heartfelt letter from one of our residents' mothers. For over a year, this person, and it's the last page in your packet, went missing. And we received a phone call from Central Lutheran saying that there was a gentleman that was sleeping on the park bench outside of Central Lutheran, and could one of our outreach workers come and work with this young man? And so Andrea, one of our outreach workers, went over there and started to build a trusting relationship with him, which is just absolutely critical as a first piece of our work with folks, and convinced him to come in and live inside of our safe haven at Hennepin. He gave us all sorts of information about who he was, where he had come from, and also a social security number, even a medical assistance number. Well, after about 2 months of being in the program, Hennepin County came back to us and said, this gentleman is not who he is saying that he is. And we just knew that this was a good guy, and we had to find out who he was. So another person not eligible for benefits that we were about preventing homeless nuts, not creating it. We weren't going to turn this guy back out in the street. And so one day he just came down to the staff office and he said, I think I have some information. I think I gave you the wrong numbers, and I think this is really who I am. So we did a little bit more investigative work, and we were able to locate his mother and call her. And she reported to us that she had just returned from the Vatican praying that she would find her son. And he's now safe and sound, living in our safe haven, and is getting ready to live into his own long-term permanent housing. She would love to have been able to be here today, and unfortunately she was not able to come and testify herself. And I'm really glad that we had a limited amount of time, because I can't read a letter without breaking down crying, because it's so heartfelt. So on behalf of the people that we work with now and in the future, ongoing funding for this program is critical. We take people before they get public assistance of any kind. That's where people are. And without this funding, we will not be able to sustain our program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Webster Smith. Are there any questions or comments by members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does Safe Haven have a doctor or someone on staff? I think you said there was someone in t-shirts and something like that. So,
yes.
Is that just one? Is that one doctor? Is there a clinic that he works out of, or someplace that is recommended?
Ms. White.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, this project, the Safe Haven Project, is a collaboration between the University of Minnesota Department of Psychiatry and People Incorporated. So our partner provides the psychiatric services, and that is Dr. Vukatich. In fact, also in your packet, the third sheet in, is a letter. We call him Dr. V because Vukatich is actually unpronounceable. He is currently the psychiatrist and has been with the project since its opening in 05. In addition, whenever he has psychiatric residents, those folks are brought in to work also with the folks living on the streets and the ones in the residence. People can continue to see these docs even when we move them on into permanent housing once they've stabilized. So this is, he's not our employee, he's the University of Minnesota's employee, but he works on site at the Safe Havens.
Okay.
Mr. Anderson, or Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Thiessen, I know this is not a committee where we talk about finances, but it does say in the overview that it talks about adding to the agency's base. Do you know what the base is? And has the governor got a recommendation for this in his
no, thank you, Madam Chair. The governor does not have money for this. I don't believe there has been money for this, or there's been an earlier grant, but it was one time. Yeah, and then it ends. It was one time that ends at the end of this fiscal year to get this up and going. And I think the point really being made here is that without funding this year, this is kind of one of those do-or-die circumstances. This program goes away if we don't provide them with funding.
Ms. White, can I?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I just wanted to talk a little bit. I don't think that I talked very much about how we have been funding this program. We do have a GRH rate, too, which this legislature gave us for 2 years but needs to be re-upped, if that's the term. People Incorporated did a major fundraising campaign in order to start this pilot project. Minnesota has never worked with street homeless people with serious and persistent mental illness. We only were serving folks in Minnesota who at least can go to shelters or who can make doctor's appointments or shelter enough appointments to get a case manager and get served that way. Street homeless folks in Minnesota were not getting mental health services. They instead get taken to emergency rooms, detox centers, and the jail. So we did, we raised a little over $1 million to fund the startup of the Safe Havens. Since then, we've gone back to our funders and raised another $400,000. And we told our funders that if we're going to continue this program, we need to have state funding. We need to have ongoing permanent funding. In your packet on the second page, it talks about who we've served, how many people we've served thus far. In our Safe Havens, we have brought in 69 people in little under 2 years. 31 of those people have already moved on to permanent housing, and and 45 continue to get services, which means we've got 20 people in the two Safe Haven sites. Some people are still getting services from us. They might have moved on to other housing options, and we're continuing to support them. And the rest are in permanent housing. We've only had 3 people return to the streets. And the national average is way below this. As our executive director said, after the first year, we would have let this program go, but it's been too successful. It's phenomenally successful.
Representative Vance.
Madam Chair, you mentioned the Safe Havens being in Chicago, Seattle, and other places. Mm-hmm. Is there a national organization of Safe Havens that you have kind of members of, or just you're just taking the way you organize was just basically from what's happened in other cities, or how did you
Ms. White?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, when we began researching best practices or national models for serving street homeless, that's where we discovered that Safe Havens exist. We read a lot. You know, the Internet's a wonderful thing. We read a lot about the philosophies and the policies and the practices that go into Safe Haven. So then our executive director, Dr. Tim Burkett, and I traveled to the closest Safe Haven, and that was in Chicago, and spent 11 hours there that day, and talked with the staff and met with the clients and reviewed their system. We liked a lot about their Safe Haven, which was also very small. It served 10 people. But they did not have psychiatry and psychiatric nursing on site in their building. So even though people were able to come in and they were not expelled, I met an individual who had been there nearly 3 years, and he still had significant symptoms of schizophrenia. I have a long history of mental health, and I know that not treating symptoms leaves people unable to move forward in their life and unable to reach their own goals. He knew that there was a psychiatrist available, but there wasn't a nice, friendly voice there in the Safe Haven setting. So that was the one thing that in discussion with the university we decided to do. We decided to make that a part of our system, a part of our Safe Haven. And it turned out, I think it turned out that maybe made the major difference in why we see the high rate of success for people.
Thank you. Representative Panning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Thiessen, thank you for bringing this forward, and thank you for your testifiers and their description of a very important program that obviously has had great success. I come from a metropolitan area that could use a similar kind of service. And I support this, and I hope we're able to do it. And I guess I'd like to just let you know, Representative Thiessen, that we'll be talking to you next year about perhaps doing something like this up our way. That we clearly have very similar problems in trying to serve that population. And so thank you.
Thank you.
Seeing no other members, I will reconsider to move House File, or excuse me, I want to move House File 913, recommended to pass and refer to Health and Human Service Policy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? House File 913 passes.
Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair
you,
members.
Representative Thiessen. Members, we will not be meeting next Friday. As stated last week, remember, bills that would pass out on March 23rd wouldn't be going anywhere. And I'm pretty sure you will be scheduled to be in another committee meeting, and so it's not that your time will be free. However, please. And I don't believe we will meet April, what is that, March 30th either, because that will be finance deadlines. However, after we get through deadlines, there may be some informational hearings. We still have a lot to learn, a lot to discuss, and find out what's going on throughout the state in this area. I'm very thankful of you guys' participation in coming in on a Friday when we could be in our districts talking to our constituents or spending time working or spending time with our families. And that shows a lot of commitment from each one of you guys to want to figure out how to improve mental health issues in our state. And so, members, meeting's adjourned.